The history of humankind, I believe, is a history of relationships. It is created from the stories that we tell and the interactions we have with family and friends and neighbors, and yes, with strangers. When I think of history, I think of people like you and I, caring for loved ones, the frail, the sick, the wounded. I think of people falling in love, making babies, getting married, raising families. I think of people working side by side in fields and buildings. I think of all the meals that we have been eating together, the singing and the dancing, the arguing and the misunderstandings too. The many stories of human love and human conflict. I believe this is human history. And built into the ebb and flow of life begetting life is the human calendar. Not the sun and moon calendars of hours and days, but the calendar of human relationships, marking those personal moments of birthdays and anniversaries, and also marking days that deepen the human maturation of soul and spirit, and that strengthen our relationships in community. This morning, we recognize two of these holy days from communities that have shared history with Unitarianism. The Islamic New Year marks the journey made by Muhammad in 622 from Mecca to Medina. For 3 years, Muhammad had received revelations from the Archangel Gabriel and shared these with the growing community that followed him. He shared the revelation that God is one and that he, Muhammad, was the last of God's prophets, culminating the lineage of prophets begun with Abraham and Moses. His preaching was met by hostility in the region of Mecca, and so he moved his followers to the safety of Medina. The journey, which is called the Hijra, came to represent a journey to a place where the new Islamic community was able to practice their religion free from persecution. And when he arrived in Medina, the Prophet Muhammad drafted the Charter of Medina. And according to a sermon being read in a mosque in Abu Dhabi today, this great treaty organized relations between Muslims and others, preserving their right to peaceful coexistence, and also defined their duties and guaranteed their freedom. Islamic New Year is not one of the high holy days of Islam, but at sundown tonight, it marks the beginning of the Islamic calendar. And the intent of this holy day is to reflect on peace and the freedom to practice one's religion, to remember and to be grateful. Also at sundown tonight begins the Jewish holy day of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh is the Hebrew word for head, and Shana means year. Thus, Rosh Hashanah means head of the year. At the synagogue, the holy ram's horn, the shofar, will be sounded 100 times. Hearing it is our wake-up call. Literally, hearing it means pay attention. Rosh Hashanah is a time to pay attention or reflect on one's relationships and actions of the past year, to reconnect to community and to God and to oneself. The Jewish religion recognizes that it is important for the health of a community and the spirit and the soul of each person to stop and take time for self-reflection, self-examination. It is a recognition that is important to be accountable to oneself and to the people that surround you. As an interesting side note, the Hebrew Rosh Hashanah is epistemologically related to the Arabic Rasa Sana, the name chosen by Muslim lawmakers for the Islamic New Year. Now, it's easy to think of Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and Unitarianism as different and distinct religions. And members of each group have worked hard to define those differences. distinct holy days, distinct rituals, distinct sources of wisdom, dogmas, and creeds. All of these details express their beliefs, and they are there to show what is distinctly unique, even to the point of creating a story that says one group is both different and superior to all other groups. It is not surprising that there is in the human being an impulse to be better than, to be competitive, to distinguish oneself, which sometimes means distinguishing oneself by demeaning or putting down others. It is an aspect of the human to want to win, to be top dog, to be in the exclusive religion. We can see this in the development of Western religion. The Emperor Constantine worked to distinguish the emerging Christian church by forcing farther apart the commingling of Christian, pagan, and Jewish holy days. When at the Council of Nicaea in 325, he ordered his clergy to uncouple Easter and Passover. Before the Council of Nicaea, Jewish, Christian, and pagan communities understood that they shared a similar motivation for celebrating the renewal of life in the springtime. Although they ritualized it differently, there was an openness to sharing, to the shared source of these celebrations. In 381, at the Council of Constantinople, the Holy Spirit was added to the description of God, establishing what became known as the Trinity, thereby creating even a greater division between Christians and their closest monastic neighbors. It was this divide, the creating of the Trinity, that alienated Jews, pagans, and Muslims from their Christian neighbors, and that inspired Michael Servetus in the 16th century, one of our ancestors, to research the source of Trinity, of the Trinity. And he wanted to find a way to keep the good relations between these people together. And if you remember my last sermon, Servetus' argument for the unity of God was based on the fact that he found no confirmation of the Trinity in the Bible. As the Christians were working to distinguish or disengage themselves from other religions, farther to the east, Mohammed was convinced there was a natural kinship between the monastic religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. In Mecca, the region where Muhammad lived while receiving the prophecies, some of the local Arabs already believed that God, or Allah, who they worshipped, was the same God that Jews and Christians worshipped. For example, I quote here from Susan Ritchie's book, Children of the Same God, The Relationship Between Unitarianism, Judaism, and Islam. She says, in 621, Muhammad directed Muslims to fast on the Jewish high holy day of Yom Kippur, naming this fast day Azura for the Muslims. His mystical night journey had revealed to him the importance of Jerusalem as a holy city for Christians, Jews, and Muslims. And when the community moved to Medina, fleeing the persecutions they were encountering in Mecca, Mohammed formed the first Islamic state on the explicit notion that the Jewish tribes, as well as the pagan ones, would be one community with believers. It was nearly 900 years later, when Unitarianism was first forming, that the influences of Islam and the thread of toleration, religious toleration, came to bear on the thinking of the Unitarian King Sigismund. Transylvania in Eastern Europe was at the time was a shoreline of religious and political tides. From the east rolled in the influences of Islam, from the west, Judaism and Christianity, and paganism from all sides. Far from the power centers of Rome and Geneva, the radical thinkers of the Reformation had a whole country to germinate and grow their ideas. Early Unitarianism had more similarities to monotheistic Judaism and Islam than to the triune theology of Christianity. Historian Ritchie has demonstrated that there is a direct connection between the Ottoman Empire's influence on the laws and practice of religious toleration in Transylvania. And she has uncovered passages in the Transylvanian Edict of Toleration, or the Law of Toleration, that are directly traceable to Islamic texts. Another interesting fact connecting Unitarianism and Islam was the discovery of Muslim prayer rugs in Unitarian churches in Eastern Europe. It is through these traceable influences Unitarianism developed more as a religion of inclusivity than the direction the Christianity was going at the time, which was increasingly exclusive. We may think of the early Unitarians as radical heretics described by the establishing Protestant church, but Ritchie suggests that our ancestors were more likely inclusives who were responding to the multi-religious cultures where they lived with thoughtful, peaceful, and creative actions. I believe that today we are in a time of confluence, a coming together, a flowing together, a time when we are beginning to see not the differences between us, but the similarities. And we need to draw on the lessons learned by our ancestors from a time when the emphasis was on similarities and not differences. Simultaneously, we're now in a time of extremes, as those with exclusive belief systems are holding on tighter and tighter to their exclusivity. So we also see the rise of the religious right and fundamentalism in Islam, in Christianity, even in atheism. The edges between some of these human groups are hardening. In this time of instability and change, possibly what some call a paradigm shift, there is an attempt by those who I call the exclusivists, to find a location that is defendable and secure. It's what we do when we're scared. I see this time in history as two ends of the human spirit, weighed down with patterns of calcified thought, burdened with historical conflicts and ancient power structures. I think we're witnessing the end of certain power structures, and when institutions die, there is fear both of the dying and fear of what will replace what is. These exclusive groups, I think they need our help, need help to see the similarities between them, need help finding the language to dialogue, find help seeking a foundation on which to connect. That's where we Unitarians have experience. We can be the bridge builders that bring those who want to reform connection together. Our history of religious freedom, our history of being at the shoreline of interreligious dialogue, our values of the inherent worth and dignity of all people, our desire to seek wisdom from many sources, including many religions, all put Unitarians in the perfect position to serve this world today. Unitarianism has been a multicultural and multi-religious movement from its beginnings. History, as I said before, is simply a bunch of stories of relationships. It's made up of millions of small and large decisions that human beings make every day. It is the story, the many stories of love and connection and caring, and stories of pain and conflict. What has our tradition learned about relationships? And what can we share? We know that when we enter into a relationship, we do so with respect, even if both lives are so different we cannot even see the similarities. Still, we treat each person we meet with this respect, and whether we agree with them or not. This is how we build the bridges. What is the light between us? It's the commingling of atoms that have been shared for millions of years. It's the energy of the stars and the hope we hold for one day deeply knowing that our human journey transcends the different and divisive stories we tell. If God is one, then maybe perhaps we can know and reflect that unity that is being simply human. I can't help thinking of my community, not this one, but where I live, which is a co-op. And it's a little like the United Nations in terms of the different cultures and religions. My immediate neighbors are Jewish, Mormon, atheist, Zoroastrian, and Christian. And I'm sure there's a few secular folks in there too. And we get along pretty fine. Greeting each other as we take out the garbage, going off to work, raising our children, caring for our elderly and sick, celebrating birthdays and holy days. We live side by side, perhaps as our ancestors did, easily tolerating our differences yet sharing the human journey together of daily living. May this give us all insight and hope for our world.